This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Timps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about codependence with Tanisha Johnson. To start off, I've got a definition from the charity Family First. At the most basic level, codependency is a condition in which people feel an extreme dependence for certain loved ones in their lives. This dependence often progresses to the point where affected individuals feel responsible for the dependent's actions and feelings. It may affect self-perception and esteem. So how do you feel about that definition, first off?
Well, first of all, I haven't got my stand as normal because Bobby left it in London during our live recording. I don't know if anyone's mentioned the live recording yet while I've been off. So I'll try and keep the mic as still as possible. I don't know really how I feel about that because, in a way, I've always viewed codependency to be a little bit more the anxiety and the self-worth, lack of self-worth comes first, as opposed to you progress feelings about somebody and then you lose yourself. It's kind of, I've always thought of, you know, people who might have high levels of anxiety, don't feel good about themselves, find themselves becoming codependent. But I guess that grey nature of it.
Milan's recently had some new toys, so that's what you can hear. I'm just going to quickly move her out of the room.
I guess that's why it's undiagnosable. It's really hard to measure. It's quite a subjective thing.
For sure. So for context listeners, whilst this is considered a condition that people deal with and is something that can be identified, it's not diagnosable as its own standalone mental illness. There are a lot of symptom crossovers with personality disorders. It can also commonly come along with anxiety and depression that you've mentioned. Like with our guest today, she experiences depression and sees a lot of similar symptoms. However, because it's not in the DSM and is therefore not diagnosable as a separate mental illness, it means researching it is a lot more difficult. So there's no set standalone definition. It's also a lot more difficult to find prevalence statistics. Because when the definitions vary so wildly, you could find a lot of people can have it or not have it, depending on how it's defined. So I wanted to go for that definition as one that's quite broad, and so being a little bit longer. But as you'll hear in the episode, it can be quite difficult to distinguish codependency as having symptoms separately to other conditions because of that much crossover. Mm. Instead, it's more often viewed as an unhealthy way of approaching relationships as a result of trauma, which can include mental illness.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a really good explanation, actually, Bob. The way that whatever experiences you may have may then lead you to put your own wants and desires aside to support somebody else in whatever way that might be. And I think traditionally people view codependency as supporting somebody perhaps with substance abuse, and again, we now know that that's not necessarily the case. It could just be, you know, somebody lives a life that's not as functional as you might want it to be or whatever in your relationship, and you support them and let, you know, them kind of run wild, if you like, while your needs aren't being met.
Right, and that's why it's difficult to even describe, because there's so many different ways in which this can show. So in today's episode, I'm quite glad that we talk about codependence in different types of relationships. So often the focus can be on romantic relationships.
Yeah.
And whilst that is often the most intense type of codependence, it's not the only kind.
No, because parents, family, or anybody really.
Yeah. And in fact, that's often where people can develop this as a sort of coping mechanism in a way. Is from parents that if they don't feel that their emotions are valid growing up, it can be easy to put the priority into other people's well-being. And so you'll often see that pattern if someone is codependent, that they constantly find themselves supporting everyone else whilst not looking after themselves.
Yeah.
In that way, I kind of understand it as being like an extreme form of rescue complex. So we talked about that recently on the show. rescue complexes similarly being a trend of behaviour that people can exhibit due to their past or potentially an unhealthy way of approaching relationships, in which people try and rescue others, and that's often linked with the ways in which they didn't get the support growing up. So people with rescue complexes will often relate to people who've had similar hardships to them and try and save that person in lieu of saving themselves. It's a sort of way of externalizing your coping mechanism. And in a way, this is kind of similar. People that are codependent will find value and worth in looking after other people, because perhaps they grew up in a way where they were expected to look after everyone else, and that's the behaviour they were rewarded for and therefore felt validated by.
Absolutely. And often in return, they're not getting the same back. Often not in a positive way, helping people, or you're helping a loved one or a child or a partner, because they're going through, there's a difference between that and just reaching out and trying to help somebody and not actually getting anything back, or the relationship actually being to your detriment.
Yeah.
Making you feel even worse, but you still really want to just support and help that person.
It's really difficult because in many ways, codependents can feel comfortable and right that if this is your approach to relationships, and I think to a degree we all have elements of it. When I was doing the research, there were some studies that estimated prevalence to be up to 90% and above. If you look at, do people have symptoms of codependence? You know, are there elements of it that all of us have at times? I think probably. But it's figuring out the level which is healthy.
Yeah.
You know, I remember growing up, a lot of narrative at school about treat others as you wish to be treated. But there has to be limits to that. If you're staying in a relationship and your response to mutual support not being there is that you double down on how you're supporting that person, that's when it's becoming unhealthy.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so true. And actually, looking at some of the research as well, when they compare dependence and codependence, you know, there's, I don't want to say suffering, but one person is the codependent person, where the other person isn't necessarily.
Yes, although it can happen where you have codependence on both sides. So you're both putting all your energy into supporting the other one, not looking after yourself. But also beyond that, it's not just about the imbalance. It's also about there being a danger in having no independence. If your emotional state is totally reliant on looking after someone else, then when they're having a bad day, you're automatically having a bad day as well. And particularly when this comes along with mental illness, that can be really dangerous for your health.
And it must be so tricky when you're also living with depression and anxiety, you know, to get out of and to change that codependent relationship, you know, when you're already feeling quite low and vulnerable.
Right.
And you just then hope you meet people in your life that don't take advantage of that, you know?
We both share that. We really look for the best in people. We also need to know how to deal with when people don't live up to our expectations and when we come across people that aren't as healthy for us. And as you'll hear with Tanisha, that really meant reframing a lot of how she perceived people, that a lot of reliant behaviour on her, which she took as a sign of, oh, I could be useful to them, they'll stick around, we could have a relationship here. She actually then came to realise, oh no, this is signs that these people could be unhealthy.
Well, absolutely. And what I took from it, that she started to check herself out and say, actually, what kind of person am I that these people are coming to me and that I'm allowing this to happen? I'm going to look within and sort this out.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to hoping that people would come by that wouldn't take advantage. She was like, No. And it goes with her accent even better because she's one of our global guests and is amazing. I love it when we get an American. And she was like, I love Tanisha. She was brilliant. But she was like, no, I can imagine her. If she wasn't on the podcast with her professional voice, she'd be like, I ain't having it. Oh, no, you didn't, wouldn't she? I loved her. She was amazing.
Yeah, so it's a really fascinating episode. It's something that, having had time to reflect on the interview, I've certainly had people be codependent on me. And I don't think I'd really thought about it. I'd maybe looked out for making sure I'm not codependent, but I'd not really thought about, are people codependent on me or have they been in the past?
No, that's a really good point.
So I think there's a lot to learn from this. And she's wonderfully articulate and so warm and lovely. And of course you'd want her to look after you.
Yeah, she's amazing.
So I can see how, you know, how this has been something very difficult for her to overcome. So we'll be getting into that interview shortly. For now, we do have something else to talk about. You mentioned it earlier.
The live show.
So as of recording this, Danielle is back to work. Yay. Feeling better. We've finally slept off the live show.
Yeah.
So what did you think of it?
We were overwhelmed, weren't we, by the response.
Really blown away. We had all positive response. Those people sharing it online, those people coming up to us afterwards saying how much they'd enjoyed it. It was one of these things that I was somewhat nervous about, even during the event, that we tackle so many serious topics here on the podcast, but I still always want people to go away with a feeling of being uplifted, you know, even if it's just that they learnt a tool that's useful, even if the stories that are shared and the content can be quite emotionally intense. I want people to find something joyous in how real it is, you know, how brilliantly open our guests are in what they share, because that certainly brings me a lot of joy, learning about people in such a fascinating and intimate way. To have the opportunity to interview people in front of an audience and have people react and hear people laugh and have people ask questions in the Q&A part was just really incredible.
Yeah, I think it was. It was inspiring. And you rightly mentioned, people might think, oh, you know, mental health podcast live, what's that going to be like? Am I going to leave thinking, oh, quite low? But absolutely the contrary. I mean, you know, the listeners will hear it, but it was so uplifting. We've got whoops and shouts from the crowd. And then we had music at the end and it was just so cool. And you're right, it's inspiring, actually, when you hear people share their stories. You felt part of something. Everybody in the room felt connected and proud, almost, with strangers, that people were open enough to want to share. And everybody in that room would have been able to connect with one. We had three panellists, you know, with one of our guests, of something that they said. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just so powerful. They were all so different, but Byron, Hope and Charlie, you know, thank you again, because they were just amazing. And all the feedback that I've heard has been, oh my God, the guests were brilliant. And Bobby, of course. Can I photograph Bobby? I don't know how many times I heard people say, can I have a photo with you? But yeah, it was amazing. I felt really proud of everybody. And of you, Bob. Well done.
Thank you. And you.
It's good.
So it's probably not a surprise, but we will be doing more.
Yay!
We're so delighted with how it went. So we'll share some news in the coming weeks on when the next one's going to be and what the next theme will be as well. But overall, really delighted with how it went. And I think overall, it was a really wonderful example of the power of feeling at home somewhere, that we all had shared experiences. There were things shared that everybody in the room could relate to. And in that, it really united the audience and us and the guests. And we all walked away having learnt things and having felt that we were really part of something special. It's taken a good few days to kind of let that all sink in, how much people enjoyed it. And yet it's so new for us. We didn't know what to expect.
I know.
So delighted.
So we can't wait to do more.
So yes, we will definitely be doing more. So look out for news on that really soon. For now then, we will get into today's interview with Tanisha. And yeah, I mean, she's really an example of all the things we've just mentioned. She's insightful. She's articulate. She was really fun to interview, but we tackled some really important themes as well. So we'll get into that interview in a moment, but first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
My name is Tanisha Johnson, and my journey of mental health started when I was 28. I was diagnosed with dysthymia, now known as persistent depression disorder, as well as general anxiety. I remember always being worried about things, I think starting like the age of like 15 or 16. But I didn't know that me constantly having thoughts about things going wrong were signs of anxiety. I kind of normalized it. I thought that that was just something normal to always be thinking about the next step or worried about the next thing. I kind of just normalized that as a part of life. So I didn't think that it was actually something to be concerned about.
And how early did that start, the kind of the worrying and the constantly thinking ahead?
I remember like constantly thinking ahead and worrying when I was about 15. When I was in high school, it seemed like it kind of heightened. I had a lot of stress just about getting assignments done on time, whether or not I would get good grades. I put a lot of pressure on myself to make sure I can apply for the best colleges. I put a lot of pressure on myself with my image too. It took me a while to kind of like be okay with being a dark-skinned Black woman. I always kind of wanted to be lighter because I felt like being lighter was like more beautiful and more attractive. So I put a lot of pressure on myself just like with my physical appearance, you know, as well. I kind of just thought that that was normal because a lot of my friends did that. But when I was in grad school, one of my colleagues, she pointed out to me that my anxiety was like really heightened and it was a lot. And she told me that she felt like I should like get some help. My first response to everything is people don't know what they're talking about. So I didn't really, take heed to what she said. But when I had my first panic attack, I knew something was wrong.
And that can often be the case for people, that it takes that one thing to kind of jolt them into going from a place of survival and trying to kind of push things down and pretend everything's okay to them realizing, okay, this has gone too far now.
Yeah.
Also a really common experience in that I often describe growing up as an experience of figuring out what is a you thing and what is an everyone thing. And I hear a lot of that in your experience, that these things you've partly rationalized by thinking, oh, it's normal. Everyone is feeling this way.
Yeah.
And it took somebody from the outside to sort of pierce that in a way.
Yeah, she really pointed out that the way that I just talked about like my daily tasks and the way that I just kind of just was constant like in thinking mode was not healthy, you know, for me. And she felt like I was like worrying myself so much that I wasn't enjoying like the day-to-day moments or experiences. And because I trusted her too, I really reflected on what she said. And I did kind of realize that I wasn't allowing myself to live in the moment because I was constantly worried about the next moment.
Right. That's so important, that so often we can get carried away with the future. And I guess in a way, a survival of the mental illness, that we're just trying to kind of plan ahead and feel as prepared as the anxiety is telling us we have to be.
Right. Yeah. It was a very difficult time, I remember. So that was kind of like when I was 16, when I noticed it. But then as I got older, it was kind of like this combination of like not feeling in good spirit either that came over me. Now I know it was depression, but I didn't know what it was then. But I just like didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to get out of the bed. So I just kind of felt like I was being double teamed in a sense. Like my depression was telling me that I couldn't do anything, but my anxiety was telling me I have to do everything.
Yeah.
And so it felt like there was no middle ground where I could just relax, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine that must have been quite scary because you don't want either side of that. So how do you find the happy medium?
Yeah, exactly. That's how I felt. I found a healthy medium through going to therapy and just talking about my feelings. And I learned that I had a lot of environmental factors that were causing me to be depressed. I placed like a lot of guilt and shame on myself for not being able to support others. And so it was kind of just like a whirlwind. I really found out that I was codependent, and that kind of changed my life because it gave like a meaning to like what I was experiencing and why I was struggling. And I had to like learn how to live a complete different life of taking care of myself. I have no idea what that meant, you know, my life. I've always taken care of other people around me, like, you know, my parents, my friends, my family. I thought that like showing people, actually like being there for people, is the only way to express love and concern. But I didn't think about how I was exhausting myself in the process of doing that. And that's kind of like what brought on like my depression, because my internal self was like exhausted and tired. But I kept telling myself I have to do it, because if I don't, people aren't going to like me or they're not going to love me. And I really didn't even know who I was outside of like caregiving for other people.
That's a really great way you've described it there, not knowing who you were outside of caring for other people. Because if people aren't familiar with the term codependent, that's what a lot of it boils down to, that your life is so intrinsically tangled in theirs that your sense of self can be lost, and any ability to prioritize what you need can get lost in that.
Yeah, definitely.
And so going through counseling, were you able to become more aware of where that had come from?
It did, yeah, I did. It was a very interesting discovery because my therapist kind of took me back to like my childhood experiences. And we talked a lot about just how I grew up. And I grew up with me and my mother, and my father wasn't there. And I did kind of always feel growing up that my father struggled to maintain a relationship with me. But I always tried to make sure that I was the best, so that he would want a relationship with me. You know, like I'm the best student, you know, the best daughter, like, and because I thought that I had did something to cause him to not interact with me the way that I wanted him to, in the way that I felt like a father and daughter should be interacting. But through therapy, actually, as we talked through all my just memories, you know, of growing up and my dad, what we found was that I didn't have the self-esteem and the self-love within myself to know that I could put myself first and it would be okay, and that people will still love me. And I kind of surrounded myself with people that were needy and who were narcissistic, because those were the type of people that I felt like would always love me and care about me, because I would always be able to do something for them, or I would always be perfect, so to speak, in their eyes, because they're needy. And here I am having like all these resources. And I didn't know that I kind of was set up from childhood for that, because that was kind of how the relationship played between my father and I, like me feeling like I have to support him or help him. And my father recently passed away 5 months ago. But I remember when I was sharing, you know, these things with him, we both laughed. And he was like, "Tanisha, I always loved you. It was just, you know, we had an estranged relationship, but I never wanted you to feel like you have to do more, you know, because of that." But it's like, as children, we don't know that, you know, no one is telling you that your father isn't here just because he's, you know, married to someone else. You know, like a child feels like the father isn't here because of something that they did, you know, and they're quote unquote bad for that.
Right. That's so difficult to rationalize as a young person. You know, when you're seeing your friends at school going home to two parents, it can be incredibly difficult to wrap your head around that. And so it sounds like your way of doing that was to turn the focus in on yourself and think, well, what what's wrong with me that my family isn't like the families I see around me.
Yeah.
But equally, it's so lovely to hear that you were able to, through making the realizations in counseling, have that conversation that before your dad passed, you were able to clear the air and really get to the root of the fact that he did love you all along and you were doing enough.
Yeah, I was really thankful for that, to be able to have that experience.
Yeah, because really what you're describing is overachieving, that that's what you were set up for. And with your dad, you so craved that relationship and you didn't know how to create it, you know, and actually, in hindsight, you never could. There's two people in that relationship, and if one of you's not there, there's no amount of overachieving that's going to fix that from just one side.
You're right. Yeah. It kind of felt normal, you know, to me. But it was just a weird journey, you know, the more that we talk and I actually get a chance to reflect on it, because I never would have thought that something that happened to me when I was a child could have the power to still be carried throughout my adulthood life. Mm-hmm. I remember learning that in school, you know, but I guess I never just applied it to my own life. You know, that could be the reason why I'm struggling with relationships and like struggling to define what a healthy relationship is, because I've never actually been in one, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so powerful. And also you've really highlighted there a big part of the stigma that if we don't have the knowledge, if we're not seeing real people that experience mental illness and have good days and bad days, and instead it's something that's not discussed, or then of course you're not going to see yourself in that. You know, you can right. hear that childhood adversity affects us in adult life, but if you're not seeing that happen to people that you relate to, of course it's going to be a surprise when it happens to you.
Yeah. That was my experience, yeah.
And so do you mind sharing an example of one of the codependent relationships you realized you were in?
Well, the first one I recognized was the one that I was in with my partner at the time. So he struggled a lot just in his life with his finances, not being able to maintain employment, not having somewhere to stay. And when I met him, he was kind of just like, trying to figure things out. And I wanted a partner, and he appeared to be interested in me. And so I literally kind of just like took him in to my house and just started taking care of him, you know, and trying to help him find a job and buy him new clothes and just all this stuff. And after I did all of that, the relationship shortly ended. And when it first happened to me, like, I was like, I kind of did like the woe is me story, like, oh my God, I can't believe this. I helped him from the ground up, you know, find an employment. I gave him somewhere to stay. I gave him money. I gave him my time, you know, and like, this is how he treats me. Like, this is a horrible person. But then when I went to, because I was, at the time I was going to codependent support groups. And when I shared with the group what I had done, you know, they told me like, Tanisha, this was a codependent relationship from the beginning. And he himself has kind of like, I guess he feels better, or he is ready to be in a relationship with the person that he wants to be with. And so that's why he left, you know, but I'll never forget it. Like a member, she told me that my healing isn't going to come from looking at what other people did to me. My healing is going to come from looking at what I did to me. Like, why did I get involved in a relationship with someone who couldn't bring the same amount of love and support and resources into it that I could? You know, why did I feel like I have to be involved with someone who didn't have anything and needed help with everything?
Right.
And that gave me work to think about.
I can imagine, yeah. And within that, it's a really great point, because there's always going to be people out there that you could slip into a new codependent relationship with. there's always going to be people that are unhealthy for you, not just relationship-wise, in general. And we don't have control over those people, but we do have control over our own choices and who we associate with and who we allow into our lives. And it sounds like that group was really helpful from that perspective.
It really was. Yeah, they gave me a lot. They were able to provide a lot of insight that I wasn't aware of. And I think a lot of it wasn't ready to examine. Mm-hmm. You know, I was finding out so many different things just about my mental health and things that I struggled with and things that were going on in my life that it kind of felt overwhelming. You know, because I remember feeling at one point like, okay, so I've been diagnosed with persistent depression disorder. I have general anxiety. And now you're also telling me I'm codependent. And now people are telling me, well, like I'm experiencing depression because I'm codependent. And like I always want to fix stuff. So I'm like, okay, well, if I fix the codependency, then I won't be depressed. But I didn't realize that, like, me being codependent was like a complete lifestyle change. So then it really felt hopeless. Like, well, how am I gonna, you know, like, I don't know how to say no to people, like, setting boundaries, putting myself first. It kind of felt like foreign terms that I was, like, reading and hearing as I was going to this group. And it just felt like, oh my God, I'm gonna be depressed forever because I don't know how to say no to people or set a boundary. What is a boundary?
Right. And that's so true because in many ways, codependents have become your coping mechanism. That when you felt unsafe and unsettled in your mental health issues, that was something you went to feel safe and to feel productive. And even on your worst days of depression, well, at least you've looked after this person. So this self-worth you were driving from that, but it was always from how am I useful to other people? That seems to be the only place you were finding your self-worth.
Yes. Yeah.
And I can see how scary that must have been, that your coping mechanism is the exact same thing the group is trying to stop you from using so much. But then what do you do instead? If you don't know how to find self-worth and meaning elsewhere. And so when do you feel that that started to change and how?
It took a while. I actually was depressed for about, I would say it probably was about a year and a half. My doctor did talk to me about medication. Mm-hmm. I chose not to. I didn't want to. Looking back, I feel like maybe I should have because it probably would have helped me just like with more energy because I struggled to do basic stuff like get out of the bed, you know, go to work, clean my apartment, you know, cook for myself. Looking back, I probably should have taken medication at that time just to kind of help me have more energy, but I chose not to. And so I suffered for a really long time. But eventually, after about a year and a half, I was able to finally like say no to people. I lost a lot of friendships in the beginning because I was very kind of passive aggressive.
But also I imagine a lot of those friendships were based on codependence, right?
They were. Yeah. Well, I was the codependent and they were the dependent. Yeah.
Yeah. So in that way, of course, they're not going to want to hear no, because if they're used to their interaction with you being you looking out for them constantly, then if you stop doing that, it's not going to feel like your friends anymore if that's what the friendship is based on.
Yeah.
And that must have been incredibly tough for you.
Yeah, it was. At one point, I did kind of just say, maybe this isn't going to work for me. I'm losing everyone around me. But one thing that I'm so grateful that I had was my group, my support group. And I went every week. And it was also, I'm a Christian and the support group was also Christian based. And so just having their support and their constant reminder, because I kind of had someone to walk me through the steps of what to expect. And I too was very active in trying to research, you know, what is codependency? What can I expect? And a lot of people told me, like, Tanisha, you're going to lose people in your life. That's the first stage. You know, there's no getting around it. So kind of just preparing for it. And of course, you know, my first response is people do not know what they're talking about. So I didn't believe it. I no longer have that first thought, by the way. But I didn't believe people. And so when it did start happening, I was just devastated, you know, because I thought that these were friendships that I could always count on. I remember particularly I lost a friend that I had in college. We were 18 when we met, and yeah, we had been friends for 15 years. Like, all my college experiences had her in my memory. And I was just devastated when, you know, she stopped contacting me. I think the way people did it shocked me, if anything. Like, just literally, like, no contact. Like, stop responding to my text messages.
Wow.
You know, stop calling me. And I was just really, it really made me feel like I was doing something. It made me feel like, what am I doing? You know? And I remember I went to group and I was expressing it to a member, and she said, Tanisha, the only thing you're doing is taking care of yourself. You know, you're not at their beck and call anymore to be their emotional crutch, because talking to people about their, you know, talking to people about their problems and their feelings is what I'm good at, you know, because I am a clinical social worker. And so I didn't realize that people kind of expected that from me, you know, like, being able to tap in with a motivational coach every day and get all this positive energy and this motivation. I can imagine, I guess it's a devastating feeling when that person tells you, like, hey, I'm tired today, you know, like,
right.
Or that.
No, for sure. And this is something I've not actually shared on the podcast before, but that has been one of the experiences I've had running a show like this, that you can kind of get typecast as who you are. So if people know me through this, or even some people that I've known previously have kind of cropped back up in my life because now they see me as a bit of an emotional lifeline. You know, they've listened to the show, they've heard how I come across on here, and they want that, the support that people can get from listening to the show.
Yeah.
You've got to have boundaries. You can't be that all of the time. This is all a part of who I am. It's not all that I am. There are times when I want to be stupid and talk about nothing, you know, and you still always need those relationships in your life. And that something I found particularly in not so much friendships, but particularly in relationships, is getting the power balance right is so important. And I think that's a really good general way of keeping an eye out for codependence. If people notice that there's a big power imbalance, that they're constantly looking after the other person, that they feel that they're having to make all of the decisions, that that person is always relying on them.
Right.
Be a real sign. So that is a challenge I've found, just trying to kind of balance. I love the podcast helping people, and I love it making a difference to people's lives. But this is also one part of who I am. And sometimes people mistake that for all of who I am. And actually, the only thing I can offer in a relationship is looking after that person. And in a way, it's almost like I'm the opposite side of this. People are trying to put codependence on me as opposed to me seeking that out.
That makes a lot of sense, because I feel like, especially now, like the world we live in, a lot of people kind of are like seeking that, like, emotional support and some form of like emotional stability, I feel like.
I would totally agree with that. So we've talked a lot about the challenges of becoming less codependent. Would you mind sharing some of the positives of what that's brought to your life?
Yeah, so one huge positive is me actually learning who I am and what I like, you know, what I need. So I didn't really know any of those things before. I mean, if someone asks me, well, Tanisha, what do you like? I can always say the basic stuff, like the color I like, my the favorite food I like. Those things I knew, but like really kind of knowing what I need, that was a new experience for me. You know, defining like what makes up Tanisha. You know, what kind of hairstyle do I like? What kind of clothes do I like? So much of my life was kind of like conformed around what I thought other people liked about me. You know, I was afraid to step out and do different things because I just had this fixation on, I want people to like me. I want people to love me. And so even down to like music and stuff that I listened to, you know, like my life really was absorbed just with constantly thinking about others and making sure that they were okay and being in tune with other people's feelings. I really wasn't in tune with my own feelings. When I went to counseling, like I learned that I was very angry and I didn't know that I was angry.
Wow.
Just, you know, because I had lived a life of taking care of others. And I guess internally I was really angry, but it just wasn't like in my conscience yet. So I was doing a lot of passive aggressive stuff, apparently.
That's so interesting. And near the start of the interview, you talked about feeling that you wanted to be lighter skinned, that's a pressure you felt a lot younger. Do you think that played in at all to thinking you need to be a certain way for other people to like you?
It did, yeah. It played a big role. I thought me being who I was not good enough or wasn't enough. So I constantly was trying to play these roles of what I thought other people needed from me and wanted from me, because I thought that would be like appreciated and valued more instead of who I was.
Right, because I think there's that on so many levels. That on one hand, I can imagine so many ways in which you were made to feel that. You know, we live in a world where there is preference towards lighter skin. There is discrimination towards darker skin. It's not that you just got that from nowhere. It's all around us. But yet, on another level, I think it also plays in quite closely to codependence, because so often when we do see representation of Black people, particularly Black women in the media, it's as supporting cast. You know, it's like the sassy or the funny best friend to the main character in the sitcom. It's the caring roles in movies like The Help, so often as having certain roles in our society, a support system to other people who are often lighter skinned and therefore perceived as having more value.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I kind of always felt like me being just Tanisha, just who I wasn't like, for lack of a better word, like wasn't appropriate. Like it wasn't accepting of other people, you know, and, you know, physically as well as just like mentally. Cause I'm a very goofy person. You know, I love to like crack jokes and make people laugh. And then I'm also a little naive, I guess a little bit. I used to be. And so that combination sometimes just kind of set me up for people to feel like I wasn't coherent about what was going on and what I was experiencing. And so people thought that they could like manipulate me easily. And oftentimes when people did manipulate me, I always knew what was going on. But because I was living in my codependent ways, I was afraid to say something because it felt better to have someone than not have anyone.
Wow. Yeah. And that is why it's so scary to break out of these patterns, because if that's the way you've learned to connect with people, if that's your main tool, then you could easily think, well, maybe I'm not enough if I'm not looking after others.
Yeah. And I think you can't see me, but I wouldn't call myself plus size, but I would say curvy. You know, I'm not, you know, I don't have like a model figure either. And so just the combination of being, you know, a little curvy as well as being dark skinned, I just always kind of felt like I was the bottom, you know, I was like the bottom row, so to speak. I was like the underman, you know, like I didn't fit like in society what they presented to be beautiful and attractive. And I felt like because of that, you know, I needed to do other things to make myself more presentable to the world. And since I did love helping people and supporting people and I was really good at it, I just took that and I was like, okay, well, I guess this is going to be how I maneuver through life, you know, and because people gravitated to it, it almost felt natural. But when I stepped out of that role, it was really difficult for a couple of years, you know, and going to the support group kind of gave me a foundation. And the interesting thing that happened is I had been using my Christian beliefs as a crutch to kind of like give me the okay. Like I used to tell myself, well, Tanisha, you know, you're a Christian, like God wants you to help people. And what ended up happening is actually I realized, like, you know what, like, he doesn't want me to help people at the exhaust of myself. Like, I'm not taking care of myself. And so I found that on all levels that I was trying to justify my lifestyle, it was wrong. Like, when I told my dad was like, he always loved me. He never felt that way about me. It's just that he was married when I was born. It was a very complex situation for him. And then also in my Christian life, I found that I was wrong there too. So then it was really like, well, whoa, what am I doing? You know, then, you know, why am I doing all this? Why am I telling myself that this is how life is when it doesn't have to be that way, you know?
And, you know, this is where I 100% relate to the anger you talked about earlier, because it makes me angry. It makes me so mad to hear that you felt the need to prove your worth, that you deserve a place in the world, because somehow you've been made to feel that who you were and what you look like was never going to be enough without that.
Yeah.
It makes sense to me that you felt like that, and I wished it didn't. I wished it was less common and it didn't happen to so many people. But that's why I so wanted to share your experience and give people an idea of codependence, that so often it can seem this vague, hard to pin down thing. But when you actually break it down, I think there's parts of it that we can all relate to.
Yeah, I agree. I think so too. And I think the scary part of no longer living that way, a lot of people can resonate with too. And I was very lucky that I had a group of people. I tell people all the time, you know, like my clients and even my friends that feel like they may be codependent, like when we step out of those roles and just kind of allow people to love us, you know, we will start to gravitate to more healthy people. That was my experience. Like when I stepped out of the role, I had my community and my support group. And as I healed, I was actually able to spot out other healthy people. And so the thoughts that I had that I would never have friends to love me just for who I was and connect with me, I saw like that wasn't the case. I saw all these people gravitating to me that were healthy, that could love me the way I deserve, that accepted me without me doing anything. It's like me supporting them was just extra. It wasn't like a requirement. They weren't seeking that for me. And it was just amazing. It's like, wow, like you love me like me.
It's incredible when it clicks, though, I think, for people, when they realize that you can get to a place where people that are unhealthy for you just filter themselves out. That if you have boundaries, that'll scare them away. If you're not going to help people out to your own detriment, but only when it's good for both of you, that puts off negative people, toxic people.
Definitely. That was definitely my experience. Yeah, it hurt for a long time, but I built new relationships. And even the relationships that I had with other groups of friends who didn't realize what I was doing, they immediately told me, like, Tanisha, you don't have to do anything. You know, like, we love you. We want to take care of you. And, you know, when my dad passed away, that was like another layer of life for me where I was able to see just so many people coming towards me, like with love and positive energy and wanted to support me. And it kind of confirmed for me, like, yeah, I'm finally living a life where I'm not codependent. And it felt good to see that happening.
And so in learning to become less codependent, how did that affect your mental health and where you're at now?
Learning to become less codependent really brought me to a place where I could tackle the things in my life that was causing me to be depressed. Because depression, it varies from person to person. But on my journey, my depression was led by me just being exhausted with taking care of people and not setting boundaries. So when I stepped out of that role and like learned how to live without being codependent, what I found is like I also wasn't depressed anymore because I was putting myself first and all my decisions, I was centering me first. And I was no longer allowing myself to be controlled by what other people needed or what other people asked of me. And so the depression, I don't want to say it miraculously went away, but it just got better and better and better to deal with. And life didn't feel heavy anymore. Like it felt manageable. When my dad passed away, I went into a little bit of depression then, but I noticed that the real big difference was that I was taking care of myself. Like I was still able to go to work. I was still able to function and do activities that I had done all the time. So it kind of, you know, that I had gained tools to use to manage my moods, you know, so that really helped a lot.
That's great. And am I right in thinking in getting out of these unhealthy relationships, it also helped your anxiety because you're putting less of your focus on how everybody else is all the time?
Yes, it did a lot. Yeah, I wasn't worried. And being worried about other, taking on other people's issues and being worried about it, that part went away. And it helped my anxiety a lot, you know, as well as my, because I had a really negative thought pattern. I had like intrusive thoughts all the time that I was doing something wrong or I wasn't good enough. And so kind of using positive affirmations and reminding myself of like who I am, reminding myself that I'm beautiful. Those were all tools I used during that time that helped me a lot that I still use today.
I love that. And so we do need to wrap up there, but if people want to find out more about you and your work, where should they go?
They can go to www.tjselfcare.com. And I'm also on Facebook and Instagram under TJ Selfcare.
Brilliant. All right. Well, thank you so much for chatting to me today. It's been great.
Thank you so much, Bobby. I really enjoyed this time.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.